This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, local elections were held in Mozambique last Wednesday, and for the first time in 10 years, the opposition party RENAMO participated in the election. And Kenya's former sports minister Hassan Wario and Olympic track star Kip Keno face charges of misappropriating more than $500,000. We have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Mozambique's Frelimo party has ruled the country since independence from Portugal in 1975, and it currently controls 49 of the country's 53 municipalities. Local elections were held last Wednesday, and for the first time in 10 years, the opposition party RENAMO participated in the balloting. To update us on the poll, we have in studio Amancio Miguel from the Portuguese service of the Voice of America. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you very much.
Amancio, have official results of the polls been published yet? And if so, who won what?
The official results have been published. There's still one place remaining to be published, but that will not change much of the situation. Frelimo, who, like you said, has been ruling the country for the last 45 years almost, got 44 municipalities. They won in 44 municipalities. RENAMO, the opposition, the main opposition part, they got like seven municipalities, and MDM, another party, the third major party in Mozambique, they got one seat. But the impact is very big for the opposition because Frelimo won in most of the seats, that's right, but opposition, especially RENAMO, they won in two of the major cities of the country, like Kilimani and Nampula. I have to mention that these two provinces, these two cities, are capital of the most populous provinces in the country. So that has an impact in the forthcoming general election, which next year. MDM won in Beira, which is like the second major city in the country. So Frelimo won in terms of quantity, but as it's being said by analysts, opposition won in terms of quality.
Yes. So besides winning this municipality seats, this election, I think, is it's been told like it's like a sense of referendum, a key test, if you may, for the upcoming peace talks between the ruling Frelimo party and RENAMO. Give us a little background on the peace talks and why they are important.
It's true. It's very important to mention that these elections are really being held in a times where Frelimo and RENAMO, they seem to be in agreement to cease the fighting in Mozambique. But at the same time, since RENAMO complains that the elections in several municipalities, they were rigged, like in Matola, which is like the Mozambique's industrial hub, and also it's like a seat which is more related to Maputo, the capital. So actually the leader of RENAMO, the interim leader of RENAMO, he said last Saturday that if Frelimo part does not change these results to benefit them because they believe they won, RENAMO will quit the conversation leading to peace. So in a way, it's also, like you say, a referendum to peace in Mozambique. And also the current discourse in Mozambique is like people believe that RENAMO won in Maputola and Frelimo just went on rigging the election. So there's a moment of tension. There were also tension in Alto Molokwe in central Mozambique, Zambezi province, where RENAMO believed that won the election. So it's really a referendum on peace in a sense that people don't trust anymore in the electoral board, because they say they keep rigging elections in favor of Frelimo. There's not been an official declaration on this situation, but as far as we know, they're going to continue with the militarization of Renam, but it's actually depending on this election which were held last week in Mozambique. And also I have to mention that most of the people that went to vote in this election are youngsters born in the 90s, and you remember that the Rome agreement between Frelimo and Renamo in 1992. So these people were born actually around their time. So they're not related to the civil war. They just want their seats well managed, and that's why the vote, like opposition, they need a change. So if there's no any clear explanation on this, this election will actually jeopardize the conversations leading to peace in Mozambique. So it's a serious situation. And if you can go online, you see the conversation going on in Mozambique in terms of social media. You see that many people believe that Renamo won in Matola, but officially Renamo lost in Matola.
A whole generation of Mozambicans, young ones, participating in local elections. That was Amancio Miguel from the Portuguese service of VOA. Thanks for your input.
Thank you very much. See you next time.
A French prosecutor has recommended dropping the investigation against 8 senior Rwandan officials, including the defense minister, General James Kabarebe, over the plane crash that killed President Jovenel Habyarimana in 1994 and set off the country's genocide. In Kigali, the National Commission for the Fight Against Genocide welcomed the recommendation. Political analysts say the recommendation, plus France's support, Rwanda's foreign minister to take the presidency of the Organization of La Francophonie, show that France intends to improve relations with Kigali. Eugene Uwimana has details from Kigali.
The French investigation into the downing of Rwandan President Habyarimana Juvenal's plane in 1994 worsened relations. Rwanda's government in turn accused France of supporting the Habyarimana government, which it said prepared and committed genocide against the Tutsi community in 1994. Havugimana Emmanuel is the chairman of the board of Rwanda's Commission for the Fight Against Genocide. He says, "We greatly salute that decision. Now the relations of Rwanda and France are improving because of new leaders." He says he thanks French President Emmanuel Macron, who is showing the new image of France. Jean Bosco Mutangana, the Rwandan General Prosecutor, says so far he has not yet been officially notified about the decision.
There is no notification. I mean, any notification has to come from the French government, the Rwandan government, through diplomatic channels, and I don't have that. Of course, I've read it in the media, but we would love to have an official communication coming to us through diplomatic channels, and I think that is the best way.
It is not the first time that this case is closed and reopened since 1998. Christopher Kayumba, a lecturer at the University of Rwanda and a political analyst, says if this case is finally at its end, it will open a wider relations between France and Rwanda.
It is an issue that has not been taken to court, but an issue that is litigated for many years. So I think if it is closed, it would mean that at least one of the issues the two governments have been disagreeing on for 20 years has ended, and then maybe they can talk about other issues that have been dodging the relationship between the two countries for 24 years.
The French prosecutors said that despite years of work, the investigation has not yielded sufficient evidence, so it should end. Now investigative magistrates must decide whether to accept that recommendation or take the case on to a tribunal. Judges do not necessarily follow prosecutors' recommendations. The probe opened in France in 1998 in response to requests by relatives of the French crew who died when Habyarimana's plane was shot down. The investigations on Rwanda's ruling party RPF officials have led to major tensions between France and Rwanda over the past two decades. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
An American woman who set up a charity in Liberia to protect girls from sexual exploitation is stepping aside as chief executive officer following a report that one of its top officials raped and abused some of the girls. The chairman of the Liberian Board of Directors for 19 schools that the More Than Me charity oversees has resigned. The organization has hired a law firm to investigate its practices. The abuse was reported in 2014, a year after More Than Me was allowed to open a school in Monrovia's destitute West Point area. On its website, the charity says it's deeply, profoundly sorry for the sexual abuse, but is very different than it was in 2014 and believes it's a force for good. McIntosh Johnson, who co-founded the charity with American Katie Mailer, was charged with raping girls as young as 11. His trial ended with a hung jury. He died in early 2016 before a retrial could be held. A lengthy investigative report on the case that was jointly produced by Time magazine and ProPublica says Johnson died of AIDS. The charity says one of the 10 girls who testified against him has tested positive for HIV. The report says $600,000 of charity's $8 million in funding came from the United States Agency for International Development. The agency said it is aware of the reports and it is looking into them. Former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo has endorsed Atiku Abubakar for president in February's general elections. Atiku, who was vice president for 8 years under Obasanjo, won the candidacy of the People's Democratic Party during its primaries. He will contest against incumbent president Muhammadu Buhari of the ruling All Progressive Congress, APC. Before the endorsement, Obasanjo had a strained relationship with Atiku and once said that God will not forgive him if he supports Atiku. Nigerians were taken by surprise when the former president changed his mind and endorsed the former vice president. Victor Agusiabo is a former vice president of the Nigerian Guild of Editors. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the sudden turn of events, saying Atiku's endorsement will not affect Buhari's chances in the election.
Well, first, I think it is his entitlement. One, as a Nigerian and a former head of state of our country, it is his entitlement to endorse anybody he so wishes to endorse.
Why do you think Obasanjo made a sudden change of mind? And do you think it will make much of a difference in the 2019 election?
My conjecture should be about twofold. Number one, there is this principle that my enemy's enemy at a point becomes your friend. So he sees Atiku as wanting to battle Buhari, who I do know he has had a very good relationship with in the recent past. I think he is an elevated opinion leader for our nation. So he may have the capacity of bringing to the fold of Atiku's support a number of people to that fold. But whether it will generally make any serious impact in the election, I doubt it seriously.
The presidency reacted by saying that the alliance between Atiku and Obasanjo will not make it to be distracted, but rather it is focused in consolidating in the achievements in areas of security in the fight against corruption. What's your take on this?
Well, that should be the natural reaction. If they are panicky about it, depending on how they look at it, then that wouldn't be good enough. I think it is a good position for them to seriously concentrate on the areas that will help them have enough to tell Nigerians, because that is very, very important in this election. What did we achieve in 4 years and all of that? Not necessarily whether an Obasanjo endorses an article. It is an ideological game. It is a matter of what did we achieve and what didn't we achieve and what were the reasons why we didn't achieve that. There is hunger in the land. Why is there so much hunger in the land? You know, such reasons why they performed the way they did should be the core of the 2019 election.
Atiku versus Buhari in the 2019 election. How do you see it? How will the contest look like?
Very, very frankly, it will be a very tough battle. Battle in the sense that Buhari is the the incumbent. There are those who believe that he has failed in some areas and is also trying in others. There are quite a lot of people who believe that he's trying to move them away from the power loop. So they are fighting like a wounded lion. A whole lot of people also are not having an opportunity to put their hands into their national till, and it is beginning to affect everybody. So hunger will play a major part in what will happen in 2019. Also, principles. There are some individuals who believe, well, he may be doing well. It will be a very balanced fight. Very, very balanced, in my own thinking.
That was Victor Agusibo, former vice president of the Nigerian Guild of Editors, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye in Asaba, Nigeria. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Twenty past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Local elections were held in Mozambique last Wednesday, and for the first time in 10 years, the opposition party RENAMO participated in the election. The investigation against eight senior Rwandan officials over the death of President Juvenal Habyarimana in 1994 has been dropped. And former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo has endorsed Atiku Abubakar for president in February's general elections. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Kenya's former sports minister Hassan Wario and Olympic track star Kip Keno face charges of misappropriating more than $500,000. They are among seven people accused of misusing money intended for Kenya's 2016 Rio Olympics team. Keno was the head of the Kenyan Olympic Committee at the time. They are accused of purchasing unauthorized plane tickets, spending funds on unapproved persons, and overpaying allowances. The 78-year-old Keno is considered a pioneer in sports for Kenya, who led the way for generations of distance runners and other athletes in world competition. Despite its relatively small size, Namibia's leaders say its potential for domestic development through foreign investment is huge. Recently, they made that pitch to American business people in New York. VOA's Adam Phillips was there.
Freddy Gausep, Namibia's commercial counselor in Washington, D.C., surveys the scene at the country's recent investor conference in New York. He says that while Namibia is known for its mineral reserves, the country has more to offer investors.
We are not only about mining and diamonds and uranium, we are also about other opportunities, whether it's in tourism, the energy sector, whether it's in the infrastructure sector, whether it's in manufacturing. We wanted to bring all those to the attention of the investors.
Dr. Bernard Haufiku is Namibia's Minister of Health and Social Services. He says investment in health services is a necessary condition for economic development in each of those sectors and others as well.
It's really just the reality that without healthy people, you can't do anything else. And that's the reason why I'm here.
Until recently, Namibia's only public hospital was in Windhoek, the national capital. The government has now built a second public hospital to serve outlying rural areas. Haufiku invited American business leaders to invest in running the facility. Namibia, he said, would repay their investment plus a profit over time.
We give the opportunity for the private company, preferably that has done the same work elsewhere already. And there are a couple of American companies that I know that we say, okay, fine, this is our terms, this is what we want. And we negotiate the repayment and the period that you are managing this hospital and training Namibian to take over and maintain the same standards. So that's very important.
Of course, hospitals depend on reliable roads to bring patients and staff to their doors. Trade, industry, agriculture, and education also depend on effective roads. Fortunately, the World Economic Forum says Namibia has the best road network in Africa. But Conrad Mutongo Lutombi, who oversees Namibia's Roads Authority, seeks investors for building new roads and improving older ones. For example, there are no toll roads in Namibia, but the government is considering using investor funds to build them.
If one invests in toll roads, there will be some returns, of course, and in our perspective, it's really going to ensure that that specific road is well maintained. And secondly, during the construction, the people living along those projects must be employed, must benefit.
The government says youth unemployment hit 43% in 2016. The government also says it's seeking investors to build opportunities for young workers and reduce widespread poverty, which can put Namibia's development and political stability at risk. There are promising signs in the agriculture sector. Until recently, Namibia imported 80% of its vegetables, but new irrigation programs are cutting that amount. Still, 6 out of 10 Namibians rely on subsistence farming, and incomes remain low. Freddie Gossip says investment in the technology that can provide farmers with data and market access will make their fields more productive and profitable. At the same time, he says, growth in the technology sector will boost youth employment.
Technology is key. A lot of youth today are into tech, software engineering, app development and the like. And a lot of people have mobile telephones and people are now using mobile phones for banking and for other purposes as well. So these are things that are happening in villages in Africa. We certainly encourage that.
Gossip adds that greater access to green energy, especially solar and wind power, will be necessary to expand technology. Dependable electricity will enable wireless internet connections with the rest of Africa and the world. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News, coming up 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Glenn Hollis, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll talk about Africa's land ownership and the challenge of land reform. We'll examine Africa's land redistribution and the fundamental issue of land inequality. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we'll have a special discussion on women's well-being around the world. Our guest is Christina Kessler, author of the book Tales of an Inkut Swamir. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in African news, features, and sports. We are also available on the internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Stand up!